IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. In these series of programs called Viewpoints, the movie critique program, we try to criticize movies with spiritual or religious themes. One of those movies that we decided, in fact, to criticize was Ouija, Origin of Evil, directed by Mike Flanagan, produced in 2016. Of course, we haven't come to the end of its critique in the last episodes, so we decided to do so. And my guest speakers in this episode, also, as well as the other episodes, as usual, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser. Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me as usual.
You're welcome. And Brother Yasser, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the studio.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Always a pleasure to be with you, brother.
Thank you very much. The pleasure is all mine. Let's take a listen to a short part of this movie, Ouija, Origin of Evil, directed by Mike Flanagan, produced in 2016, and then we'll be back with his critique. Don't go away.
Let's begin. We invite you into our circle. If that's you, give us a sign.
This is a scam.
We do not attack the clients.
We help people. We give them closure.
You are so weird.
Does she have a lot of problems?
It's nothing too concerning.
What's this?
A Ouija board for work.
Spirit, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Who are you talking to?
What?
Back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers in this episode, like usual, helping me criticize the movie Ouija, Origin of Evil, produced in 2016, directed by Mike Flanagan. Brother Yasser, I'm going to ask you something about the myth or misconceptions about the Ouija boards. What are some of the most common myths or misconceptions about the Ouija boards? Are there any?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, one of the things is that what is the objective of this particular instrument or this tool? As we said previously, it was an instrument, but I found out later on that it was something that came to came into popular culture in the 19th century in the in the United States.
Yes.
And the reason being that people wanted to communicate with lost loved ones because of famine, war, disease, whatever. So this was the reason why it came into being. However, some of the misconceptions could be that, okay, does it actually work? I mean, like I think said in one of the previous sessions we had or episodes we had, that look, there isn't any evidence that such a thing even works. The only place we actually see it is in movies, right? One other thing we could say is that if someone actually did do it and it worked, who are they going to tell? Are the people they are going to tell, will they believe them? And so on and so forth. Like another misconception could be that you are actually speaking to the person that you are willing to speak to. I mean, who knows who you're speaking to?
Yes.
If it even works, right? So, if, for example, if we assume or we kind of just, you know, take it for granted.
That's why in such movies they always emphasize, like at the beginning of their seance or meeting with, for example, a spirit or a dead or a loved one,
whatever, to
spread out what their name is. It's what they're emphasizing in such movies. Like maybe the thing that
presuming it worked, presuming that, that there is a communication connection between the person who's doing it and that particular spirit. Who's to say that that spirit doesn't have knowledge of certain things outside of, you know, the knowledge that those people have?
Yes.
You know, we've seen in many other movies that they show it that, okay, the spirit has knowledge of other things. So again, that's another misconception. Again, there's many things that can, you know, as you mentioned, that can go wrong also.
Do we have any other instruments of some sort of similar nature?
You have one of the things that you also can, is very popular movies, is a glass ball, right? You have like a glass ball of communication.
Yeah, the crystal ball.
The crystal ball.
Yeah.
Another one is the candles. They have some certain candle things.
Mm.
There's another board, but it's in the shape of a cross. I can't remember what that one's called. It's similar to a Ouija board, but it's another board altogether. It's a satanic thing. Most of the things have become satanic.
Mm.
Again, as I mentioned, it may have been placed in human hands by these forces in order to create these things. It's very possible. Sometimes, like within the Islamic tradition, you have this thing called ihdar ruh, where you
summon.
Summon or the summoning. It's not something completely confined to the Islamic tradition, but we have instances where this has happened. Some famous ulama, contemporary ulama himself, have done it. Again, you know, it's not up for us to actually deny or affirm certain things because we are not on that level. But we say, okay, it may be possible. It probably is possible.
True.
Anyway,
thank you very much. Let's take a short break by listening to a part of the movie Ouija: Origin of Evil, directed by Mike Flanagan, produced in 2016, and then we'll be back with our program Viewpoints on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
Daddy, are you there? Who are you?
Your sister's taking you to school today.
I don't want to go!
I'm going to stay here and talk to my friends.
What friends?
I'll show you. Are you here?
Back to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jahad, hosting this program, and Syed Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Ouija, Origin of Evil, directed by Mike Flanagan, produced in 2016. Syed Abdullah, I'm going to ask you a question regarding epistemology, basically, of such movies or any cult, let's say, driven practices such as this. Do the dead or evil spirits know truth or a specific piece of information that might play havoc with our lives?
It's commonly believed among the, at least let's say, the public culture, that the spirits of the dead possess knowledge. Now, one of the reasons for that is because it's commonly believed, especially in the paranormal belief, that the spirits of the dead, they live in a realm where time and space is not relevant anymore. And thus, they have a sight to the true nature of the universe and what's happening. It's something they could observe that me and you cannot observe. So
they are unified with the whole universe.
Yeah. So based on that kind of belief, that they said, well, if we can manage to get to these entities and to these souls or spirits, and we could communicate with them, they can give us and relate these realities and these truths to us.
Yes.
Whether it is through a medium, whether it is direct contact or through summoning or through a board or what have you, because this is the belief that we have.
Yes.
Now, interestingly, Islamically speaking, we do say that when a person dies, everything will become clear to him. He will see the true nature of things. For example, the ayah in the Quran says, وَكَشَفْنَا عَنْكَ غِطَاءَكَ فَبَصَرَكَ الْيَوْمَ حَدِيدٌ. Once you die, we remove the veils from your eyes, and then you can see your eyes become as strong as iron, which means you can see the reality of the truth. And then, you know, the guy says, or even like the person who dies is, رَبِّ ارْجِعُونِي, like, please send me back. So I can لعلي أعمل صالحا. I want to do good. Because now he can see the true reality of the universe, the true reality of creation. Like, is as if his memory goes back to him.
Yes.
And he gets to perceive things differently. So is it from an Islamic perspective, we do know that those who cross over, they will get to see the reality of the world that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, if we can communicate with them, if you can summon their souls like that with Urafa, with the mystics and people who communicate with the people who are died,
right,
they do convey certain truths that we don't see. And they tell us how things happen. So whether this is stemmed from a paranormal belief or a religious belief, at the end of the day, we do believe that these spirits, these souls, live at in a place or a realm where time is not relevant anymore, where space is not relevant anymore, so they have more access to the truths of the universe that me and you can learn from.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah. Let's take a short break and we'll be back and continue our program, Viewpoints, the Movie Critic Program on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
Something is happening that we can't understand.
I'm concerned about your girl.
What's this about, Father?
What are you doing? I'm not doing.
The spirit world is dangerous.
They were watching us all those years.
By using the board, you've opened up a portal.
Back to the program, Viewpoints, the Movie Critique Program on IRIB English Radio. With me, Mohammed Jawad, host of this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my guest speakers, helping me criticize the movie Ouija, Origin of Evil, produced in 2016, directed by Mike Flanagan. Well, Brother Yasser, earlier you talked about actually the kind of communication that might be possible actually with the other side. And you said, how can we make sure that, you know, this is, for example, the kind of a spirit that we are talking to? Who's that, you know? So is there any way, or how can we verify our communication with the other side or the spirits if we are summoning or trying to summon them?
I think that's a very difficult thing to actually do. If you want to look at it in a very, in like, mystical and like, a Gnostic manner,
mm-hmm,
you could say that the person who has the ability to do so must be someone of a very high caliber, mm-hmm, in order for him to verify that what he's doing is right. The being or the whatever it is that they are in communication with, you know, is intended to communicate with. So it depends on the person,
mm-hmm,
the connection of the person to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to the a'imma alayhim as-salam, that type of connection that he has to them will therefore, you know, increase his particular ability to communicate if he wants to do it. First of all, a person is not something that should be done.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, these things in the Islamic
jurisprudence,
it's not frowned upon. It's haram. It's forbidden.
Mm-hmm.
It is forbidden for somebody who to take part in these particular rituals that have these type of effects, to communicate with the jinn or to communicate with other beings if there are.
Is it haram actually for the normal people?
Anybody.
But why do the mystics actually go
approach? They don't communicate. There are certain individuals who have communicated, but there is maybe unintentionally, they didn't go looking for it.
Mm.
There are certain people who go look for it. So the point of looking for it is forbidden. It's completely haram. Communication is not haram. Looking for communication is haram. Doing, mm-hmm, certain rituals,
uh-huh,
that will enable this communication to do. There are a lot of these things written. I mean, it's not something that they know.
But we have actually traditions of the Holy Prophet, for example, going to the cemetery and talking to the dead.
That's the, right? Holy Prophet. But yeah, he's different.
That's what I'm talking about.
He's different.
Like, so it's not forbidden for everybody.
No. For normal, for everybody who is not the Holy Prophet, mm-hmm, or the A'imah, because what we said in the beginning,
mm-hmm,
the person's connection to the Holy Prophet and the A'imah. So
is
already,
it because of the dangers that it might has in a store for the person?
It definitely
trying
have,
to communicate?
It has dangers physically, spiritually, mentally,
mm-hmm,
emotionally. You know, you can mention all of these things, you, mm-hmm, know, all the dangers that it can possibly have.
Yes.
You know, there are many stories, again, whether true or false, we don't know.
Right.
About individuals who've tried to not really summon, but, you know, take a particular being under their control.
Mm-hmm.
And we have these stories and so on. And it ended up that instead of that being in the control of you, you became in the control of that particular being. You did, the person did certain things,
mm-hmm,
and so on,
mm-hmm,
thinking that, oh, I'm becoming, you know, famous, but in actual fact, you're not.
Mm.
You're just completely under the control of that particular thing.
Entity, yes.
Yeah, entity being whatever that thing may be.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much, brother. Yes, sir. That was very interesting. And thank you, my other guest speaker, Syed Abdullah, for your contribution to the program Viewpoints, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to criticize the movie Ouija, Origin of Evil, directed by Mike Flanagan, produced in 2016. And thank you, my dear listeners, for joining us or listening to the program Viewpoints on IRIB English Radio. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Want to hear something cool?
Sure.
Do you know what it feels like to be strangled to death? First, you feel the pressure in your throat. And you start to taste something very sour in your mouth. Then, it's like someone lights a match right in the middle of your chest. And that fire grows. It fills your lungs and your throat and all the way behind your eyes. And the last thing you feel is cold. Good night, Romeo.
It's just a game.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
When Namibia took a strong stance against the Zionist regime's largest military supporter in Europe, Germany, it did so based on Namibia's total awareness of its history. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "The distance between Gaza and Namibia is measured in the thousands of kilometers, but the historical distance is much closer. This is precisely why Namibia was one of the first countries to take a strong stance against the Zionist regime's genocide in Gaza. Namibia was colonized by the Germans in 1884, while the British colonized Palestine in 1920s. Handing the territory to the Zionist colonizers in 1948. Though the ethnic and religious fabric of both Palestine and Namibia are different, the historical experiences are similar. It is easy, however, to assume that the history which unifies many countries in the global south is only that of Western exploitation and victimization. It is also a history of collective struggle and resistance. Namibia has been inhabited since prehistoric times. This long-rooted history has allowed Namibians, over a course of thousands of years, to establish a sense of belonging to the land and to one another, something that the Germans did not understand or appreciate. When the Germans colonized Namibia, giving it the name of German Southwest Africa, they did what all other Western colonialists have done, from Palestine to South Africa to Algeria, to virtually all global South countries. They attempted to divide the people, exploited the resources, and butchered those who resisted. Although a country with a small population, Namibians resisted their colonizers, resulting in the German decision to simply exterminate the natives, literally killing the majority of the population. Since the start of the Israeli regime genocide in Gaza, Namibia answered the call of solidarity with the Palestinians, along with many African and South American countries, including Colombia, Nicaragua, Cuba, South Africa, Brazil, China, and many others. Though intersectionality is a much celebrated notion in Western academia, no academic theory is needed for oppressed, colonized nations in the global south to exhibit solidarity with one another. So, when Namibia took a strong stance against the Zionist regime's largest military supporter in Europe, Germany, it did so based on Namibia's total awareness of its history. The German genocide of the Nama and Herero people is known as the first genocide of the 20th century. The ongoing Israeli genocide in Gaza is the first genocide of the 21st century. The unity between Palestine and Namibia is now cemented through mutual suffering. But it is not Namibia that has launched the legal case against Germany at the International Court of Justice, but rather Nicaragua, a Central American country that is also thousands of miles away from both Palestine and Namibia. The Nicaraguan case accuses Germany of violating the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. It rightly sees Germany as a partner in the ongoing genocide of the Palestinians. This accusation alone should terrify the German people. In fact, the whole world, as Germany is affiliated with genocides from its early days as a colonial power. The typical analysis of why Germany continues to support Israel is explained on the basis of German guilt. This explanation, however, is partly illogical and partly erroneous. Illogical because if Germany has indeed internalized any guilt from its previous mass killings, it would make no sense for Berlin to add yet more guilt by allowing Palestinians to be butchered en masse. If guilt indeed exists, it is not genuine. And erroneous because it completely overlooks the German genocide in Namibia. In fact, it took the German government until 2021 to acknowledge the horrific butchery in that poor African country, ultimately agreeing to pay merely 1 billion euros in community aid. which will be allocated over a course of 3 decades. The German government's support of the Israeli regime war on Gaza is not motivated by guilt, but by a power paradigm that governs the relations among colonial countries. Many countries in the global south understand this logic very well, thus the growing solidarity with Palestine. The Israeli regime brutality in Gaza, but also the Palestinian Samud, resilience and resistance are inspiring the global south to reclaim its centrality in anti-colonial liberation struggles. The revolution in the global south overlook, culminating in the South Africa's case at the ICJ and also the Nicaraguan lawsuit against Germany, indicates that the change is not the outcome of a collective emotional reaction. Instead, it is part and parcel of the shifting relationship between the global South and the global North. Africa has been undergoing a process of geopolitical restructuring for years. The anti-French rebellions in West Asia, demanding true independence from the continent's former colonial masters, in addition to the intense geopolitical competition, are all signs of changing times. And with this rapid rearrangement, a new political discourse and popular rhetoric are emerging, often expressed in the revolutionary language emanating from Niger, Burkina Faso, Mali, and others. But the shift is not happening on the rhetorical front only. The rise of BRICS as a powerful new platform for economic integration between Asia and the rest of the global south has opened up the possibility that alternatives to Western financial and political institutions are very much possible. In 2023, it was revealed that BRICS countries are now holding 32% of the world's total GDP compared to 30% held by the G7 countries. There is much political value to this, as 4 of the 5 original founders of BRICS are strong and unapologetic supporters of Palestinians. While South Africa has been championing the legal front against the Zionist regime, Russia and China are battling the US at the UN Security Council to institute a ceasefire. Beijing's ambassador to The Hague went as far as defending the Palestinian armed struggle as legitimate under international law. Now that global dynamics are working in favor of Palestinians, it is time for the Palestinian struggle to return to embrace of the global south, where common histories will always serve as a foundation for a meaningful solidarity.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Salamu alaikum. Welcome. You are listening to today's special from IRIB English Radio on Friday, 17th of Shawwal, 1445 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 7th of Ordibehesht, 1403 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 26th of April, 2024 of the Christian Gregorian calendar.
Look around yourself. Can't you see this wonder spread in front of you? The clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue. Planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun. Such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves. Isn't this proof enough for us?
These are verses 47 to 49 of chapter القمر.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم إن المجرمين في ضلال وسعر
Indeed, the criminals are in error and madness.
يوم يسحبون في النار على وجوههم ذوقوا مس سقر
The day they are dragged into the fire, on their faces it will be said, Taste the touch of Sakar. Indeed, all things we created with predestination.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The third blessed verse in question is saying that it may be imagined that these torments are consistent with sins, thus it further adds that Allah Almighty created everything in its due measure. Their excruciating torments in this world and the severe chastisements in the hereafter and all creation are well measured. The earth, the heaven, the animate and inanimate beings, human limbs and organs, and all the means of life and sustenance have been created in the due measure, and there is nothing without measure in this world, since Allah Almighty is all wise and all His acts are based on His wisdom and omniscience.
شكراً يا ربي شكراً هديت قلبي شكراً نورت دربي شكراً شكراً يا ربي
شكراً يا ربي شكراً هديت قلبي شكراً نورت دربي شكراً شكراً يا رب
شكراً يا رب
يا منزل القرآن يا خالق الإنسان يا رب يا رحمن شكراً يا
The topic of this episode is about clean earth and environment from an Islamic point of view. As Muslims, we should naturally be a community that consumes less and uses the bounty provided on the earth in ways that are healthier, more efficient, and more equitable. Through this, we facilitate more fair access to resources, preservation of public health and cultivation of local economies. These practices promote social harmony as well as charity or zakat or sadaqah by shunning excessive consumption and the disharmony or fitna that results. Recycle, repurpose, reuse, and reflect on Allah's bountiful blessings. Look around and observe in nature and in the environment and the multitude of signs of Allah and the beautiful interweave of ecosystems and species that make up a oneness of creation, all beholden to the order and sustenance put in place by the Creator.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Ali from IR English Radio, and we are trying to be with you and talk to you about Islamic perspective and how we should interact with the environment. that surrounds us. Consideration of whole sources of Islamic jurisprudence or fiqh leads to the conclusion that animals must not be killed unless there is a legal permission by Allah, like benefiting from them or being safe from their harm. There are adequate reasons for prohibiting hunting animals for fun, and one can argue from these reasons for prohibition of killing animals without having a permitting cause. In Islamic scriptures, water is introduced as the origin of the source and the source of life, and the earth is introduced as an origin for the creation of human beings. And as our mother, in Islam, planting trees is considered as an act of worship for which special prayer is recommended, and people are urged to protect them. Animals have numerous rights, including the right to life. An animal's life can only be taken with the permission of Allah. Animals must also be loved and respected. Thus, it becomes clear that in Islam, the environment, the earth, the plant, the animals are sacred and has an intrinsic value. Even if there is no threat or shortage, we must still look after natural resources, protect animals and plants, and more generally improve and develop environment. As the vicegerent of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we have to channel the mercy of Allah to everything within our reach.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun, shining with light. Be like a rose, spreading its fragrance in every part.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain, pouring all your love to every
From the protecting the environment's least, keeping the environment clean and safe is an important part. In the pursuit of preserving the environment and fulfilling our obligations as vicegerents on Earth, keeping the environment clean and safe is part of the duty. Also known as environmental hygiene, it is an essential part of infection prevention and control, maintaining the emotional and mental stability of the inhabitants as well as our overall well-being, and promoting higher productivity across many levels of the ecosystems. There are, in fact, two sides of keeping the environment safe and clean. On one hand, it involves removing and discarding those which are dirty and harmful, while on the other hand, it would be to maintain cleanliness and oversee the safety measures placed. Interestingly, the Prophet, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, has taught us to be part of both. As narrated in a hadith, the Prophet said, "While a man was walking along a path, he found a thorny branch of a tree on the way and removed it. Allah thank him for that deed and forgave him."
Everything I have, everything I own, everything I eat is thanks to you. Every breath I take, every bird I hear, every smile I see is thanks to you.
We are speaking about environment, so plants and animals too. Islam emphasizes all measures for the survival and perpetuation of these creatures so that they can fully perform the functions assigned to them. The absolute destruction of any species of animals or plants by men cannot be justified, nor should any be harvested at a rate in excess of its natural regeneration. This applies to hunting and fishing, forestry and wood cutting for timber and fuel, grazing, and all other utilization of resources. It is imperative that the genetic diversity of living beings be preserved both for their own sake and for the good of mankind and all other creatures.
Muhammad Rilwi.
Human beings are in a way custodian, and they are amin of this amanat given to us in form of this earth and the natural resources. And this is where we come to realize that, you know, Islam also has a perspective on this issue, that use it, but use it with moderation and do not destroy the nature. Yes, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created this dunya for us. Our food comes from whatever is on the earth, even from some animals. But even there, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, I have limited the numbers of animals that you can eat. And even the method of slaughtering them, you know, is a very important process, especially to make it more healthier and better for human consumption. Second thing that we have to keep in mind in this, hunting for entertainment and sports is not allowed in Islam. Hunting for your need is okay. You know, people in the past would go to hunt so that they can, you know, use those animals to as food for themselves. And that is not a problem at all. If somebody goes on a hunting trip just for enjoyment, not because they need to, they are going to use that animal. One of the concession that you have in traveling, namaz qasr, if you go with that intention, you don't have qasr namaz there. You have to do full namaz, because the purpose was not right. Those who raise, you know, animals, domesticated animals, they also have certain responsibilities. Whether they use it for food or for the means of transportation, these are all the barakat of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Dear friends, thank you very much for listening till the end of this episode of today's special. Until then, we leave you in Allah's protection. Fi amanillah.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi, Muhammad Nabi, Aliyul Imami. La fata illa Ali, Aliyul Imami, Aliyul Imami. علي إمامي
لا إله إلا الله الله ربي
محمد نبي علي إمامي
لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Deterrent.
Part 5.
In the early hours of the morning of Wednesday, the 8th of January,
2020, 13 Iranian missiles destroy the Ain al-Assad U.S. military base in Iraq. Before the attack, U.S. President Trump had warned that if Iran attacks U.S. interests, Washington will target 52 sites in the country. And people across the world have for long wondered why the U.S. did not respond to Iran's missile attack. On September the 22nd, 2018, five terrorists stage an attack on a military parade in the southern Iranian city of Ahvaz, killing a number of innocent civilians and several military personnel. The remnants of the Takfiri Daesh group, which has lost its main bases in Iraq and Syria, immediately claims responsibility for the attack. The missile unit quickly prepares to respond to the unforgivable crime and identifies the Takfiri remnants who were housed in Bukamal in Syria. Operation Strike of Muharram is carried out on October the 1st, and six Zulfaqar and Qiyam missiles target the terrorist hideouts. Less than 2 months later, with the recapture of Bukamal from Daesh terrorists, the terror group's last strategic base was destroyed, and Lieutenant General Soleimani's promise was fulfilled earlier than expected. He congratulated the end of the Daesh Caliphate to the leader of the Islamic Revolution on the 21st of November 2017. The defeat of Daesh was unbearable for the founders of the Takfiri terror group. The U.S., Israel, and reactionary countries which were their allies considered Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani to be the most important factor for the defeat of Daesh. On the morning of Friday, January the 3rd, 2020, in violation of international laws and regulations, U.S. drones targeted Lieutenant General Soleimani and his entourage at Baghdad Airport. The Americans quickly took responsibility for the assassination in the media. They were pursuing a specific agenda by carrying out the assassination, which led to the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. The funeral of the general was attended by millions of people in different cities in Iran and even Iraq. This proved to the U.S. that they had made a huge miscalculation. They did not have a proper understanding of Lieutenant General Soleimani's popularity among the people of Iran and the region. His popularity not only increased with his assassination, but also amplified the general hatred of the U.S. and its allies. But this would not be the Americans' only mistake. While the popular demand by Iranians to respond to the assassination of the lieutenant general was increasing by the moment, the message from the leader of the revolution vowing a harsh revenge confirmed this demand. Contrary to the perception of the U.S. and its allies, the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Soleimani was not something Iran would remain silent about or not show reaction to. According to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, the U.S. allocated $732 billion to its military budget in 2019. That's equivalent to 38% of the total military budget of the world and four times more than the military budget of European countries combined.
by relying on their military arsenal and especially their nuclear warheads, the U.S. did not think Iran would retaliate for the assassination of Lieutenant General Soleimani. However, to make sure of this, Donald Trump continues to threaten Iran with a series of tweets. But neither the U.S. military might nor its nuclear arsenal nor Trump's threatening tweets have an effect on Iranians. The Qadisiyah military base in Iraq's Anbar province had been expanded and renamed to Ain al-Assad after the fall of Saddam Hussein in 2003 and the presence of U.S. forces there. The airbase is one of the most important U.S. military bases in the region because of the large number of American forces and weapons there. The strategic importance of the base is obvious as various American political and military leaders, including Trump himself, had paid visits there. Five days after the assassination of the Iranian lieutenant general and at the exact time of the assassination, contrary to U.S. expectations, Iran attacked the Ain al-Assad base with 13 Qiyam and Fateh ballistic missiles. Hundreds of missiles at different sites across the country were ready to launch at U.S. and allied targets near and far, which showed Iran was ready to respond more harshly to any possible American retaliation. But contrary to everyone's expectations that the U.S. would fiercely react, in his first speech after the Iranian attack, President Trump had a change of tone in his words.
As long as I'm president of the United States, Iran will never be allowed to have a nuclear weapon. Good morning. I'm pleased to inform you the American people should be extremely grateful and happy. No Americans were harmed in last night's attack by the Iranian regime. We suffered no casualties. All of our soldiers are safe, and only minimal damage was sustained at our military bases.
Direct hit, Chief Warrant Officer Alexander Bender's living quarters.
You realize that you're both okay.
The precision of Iran's missile strikes on the U.S. had surprised foreign news outlets and military experts and analysts. A direct strike on the U.S. had now made it possible for everyone to closely measure Iran's missile power and precision. What had taken place was no longer a missile test or an attack on terrorist or Daesh positions. It was an attack on one of the most important U.S. military bases before the eyes of the world. U.S. political scientist and professor of political sciences at MIT, Bipin Narang, wrote, "To me, the most important takeaway from Iran's strike is just how precise their SRBMs were." Adding that Iran should be satisfied with its performance, he wrote, "The accuracy revolution is real and no longer a monopoly of the U.S. This has huge implications for modern conflict and limited war." Jeffrey Lewis, a professor at the Middlebury Institute of International Studies at Monterey, shared an image on his official Twitter account of the targets of the Iranian ballistic missiles and the amount of damage done to the base and wrote, "The Iranians did not miss. These buildings were hit quite precisely." Now, we might be able to answer the question as to why the U.S. did not respond to Iran's missile strikes, even with all its advanced weaponry, an arsenal of 3,800 nuclear warheads,
a staggering military budget, which increases every year, and its claims to be the world's number one power. The Ain al-Assad incident showed that Iran can inflict heavy and irreparable damage on the U.S. and its allies in response to military attacks with its determination to use its missile power. And by not retaliating, it showed that Iran's missile capabilities have exceeded the usual deterrent limits, and as a result, a number of U.S. bases in Iran's peripheral countries have lost their threatening posture. The fact of the matter is that Iran, despite all the allegations of trying to acquire a nuclear bomb, basically has no need for it, for the simple reason that it has made the most powerful nuclear country in the world powerless with the power of its missiles.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.